Welcome to the Superkinetic Podcast. In today's episode of You Ask, We Answer, our guest is Alessia Fada. She is a program manager for training and enablement at WorkPath, where she is responsible for enabling our customers to maximize the value they get from their agile planning and collaboration processes and from the strategic operating system they implement with WorkPath. Alessia spends a lot of time with our customers every day, and with the insights she gathers from our work, there she develops and delivers training, coaching, and content for customers and partners. Which also makes her a great person to talk about today's topic, which is outcome orientation. Everyone talks about business outcomes, outcome centricity, outcome over output, but what does that really mean, and what does it take to implement this in an organization at scale? My name is Johannes, and I'm the founder and CEO of WorkPath. Before we start, I would like to remind our listeners to follow us on Spotify, Apple Music, or any other streaming service you're using. And if you like, leave us a great review. Hi, Alessia. Thanks for being our guest today.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with our first question, and I think we need to start very basic there. You are helping customers and partners succeed with new strategic planning and collaboration models like OKRs. One important aspect for a successful implementation of those to a bigger company is the focus on outcomes. Can you briefly tell us a bit what outcome orientation means in the context of OKRs and why it matters so much?
So first of all, outcome orientation is a change in mindset. So we want to move away from getting wrapped up in our own work and instead focusing on the effect that we're actually planning on having. Outcome orientation is a way to reduce waste, create more purpose around the work that we do, and most of all, institutionalize customer centricity. In the OKR context, outcome orientation is a determinant factor of the quality of OKRs and the effectiveness of the overall framework.
Okay, we'll get back to the OKR framework and why outcome orientation is such a key element of it. Another thing that people oftentimes mix up is outcome and output. Can you maybe, before we dive a little bit deeper, explain the difference between those two? What's the difference between outcome and output, and why is it so important for a company to stay focused on their outcome instead of their output?
So the output is something that we do every day, and most teams have no trouble to focus on that. So we are basically always thinking about the projects that we do and the features that we're delivering, the Jira tickets that we're doing. But it's more important to also think about another aspect. So we want to think about outcomes. What is the actual question of why are we doing this? What is the effect that we're trying to have either on the business or on the customer? And what do we have to do to actually achieve this outcome? And I always like to sum it up with doing the right things before actually trying to do things right.
I think we already touched one element why it is so difficult, much more difficult than most people think, to plan and to discuss outcomes instead of output. And this is just about how our brain works, right? So it's much easier, and most of us tend to think about the more tangible, right? I'm building this, I'm doing this, I'm going there. But also planning for the outcome, it's not just something that's more abstract in many cases, but also it requires you to know much more precisely why you're doing something and what you want to get out of it. So it's, in many cases, for an individual, but also for a team, usually connected to more effort or more of a discussion. So I think on an individual and on team level, this is a really important aspect why we see so little outcome orientation in many business contexts.
So outcome orientation does not mean that outputs are not relevant anymore. We still need the outputs. We still need the work that we do every day. That's very important. It's just a matter of what do we focus on when we plan strategically? Do we want to focus on the project that we're doing or the actual impact that we want to have?
Yeah, fully agree. So let's move from individual and teams to organizations. And in larger organizations, as soon as you have a couple of teams, it's rather common that multiple teams work on the same outcome or on shared outcomes they aspire to achieve. In many cases, this is not just overarching different teams, but really even departments across the entire enterprise. Who should be in charge then of defining these outcomes? Like, is there a good way of getting those teams together? Is this one of the team's team leaders? Like, how do you make sure a group of people who identifies with different teams respectively, they actually have a shared outcome that they not just plan and can agree on it, but also execute on it successfully and go through the entire process until the outcome is fully achieved.
So I think it's a question of goal quality. So in an ideal world, all the teams could be focused on solving a problem and using their collective intelligence, so their swarm intelligence, to do that. We live in a world where the leaders are maybe not the ones who know enough about the customers anymore. So we actually need the teams to pitch in and to give the collective intelligence to solve a problem. So to me, it's more a question about what is the quality of the goal that is coming from the top. I think it's important to tell the teams why they're doing something. And that's the message that should come from the top. But the how and the what should be up to the teams. So the teams should be able to focus on not only delivering a project or a feature, but actually solving the problem with their collective intelligence.
Yeah. So I think there's another aspect, right? Before we talked about how our brain works, why it is difficult for most of us to think in outcomes and define the outcomes and not just what we want to do and what kind of output we want to create. There is the first structural reason, or first structural challenge at least, if you don't have orientation, or if your top level goals, your company goals, don't give you the right kind of answers, it's very hard to define outcomes on a different level of the organization. I think in many ways, there's this example of many companies just giving you like financial KPIs, but those are rather controlling if you are successful as a business. They don't give you any kind of direction. So it's very hard to use them to like defining outcomes and that are deduced by them. And the other pattern that we see a lot among our customers, that even on a company level, even on organizational units with thousands of employees, the leadership team defines outputs. They define, we want to go there in this market, we want to build that. And if you already have output and like very specific projects and tasks on that high level, it's almost impossible for those hundreds or sometimes thousands of people below to actually define their own outcomes. And the bigger the organization, the further away then people are from, yeah, why am I here and what's the outcome we are creating for hopefully a kind of customer.
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest issues in today's companies, that you actually get the features, the project defined already in, sometimes they're called strategic initiatives, sometimes it's already in, the key results on the company level. And this creates a couple of issues. One is that if the teams don't define their own outcomes, their accountability and ownership is reduced. If somebody's telling me I need to reach a goal, but I, with my own domain knowledge, already know that this might be impossible, I have less willingness, so to say, to pitch in and to let that person know that maybe this is not a good outcome we're striving for, or like a good goal we're striving for. So what we want to do is that everybody, every single team member, starts thinking strategically and about not only the, let's say, strategic initiatives and outputs, but the actual outcomes. What effect do we want to have with our work?
I think there you mention a third reason why outcome orientation, outcome centricity sometimes seems so difficult in organizations. If you don't have ownership as a team, if you cannot be really accountable for the ultimate outcome for a customer, it's very hard to establish that way of thinking in your everyday work life or in the way you plan your quarter, you plan your year. One way of getting closer to outcome orientation, outcome centricity in large organizations is to become a bit more differentiated in like what kind of outcomes are there. There are different kinds of different types of outcomes that we usually talk about, right? Can you maybe talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So first of all, there are business outcomes, and those are the outcomes that foster economic stability of a company. So they're usually measured in high-level KPIs, which are often of financial nature. And they are mostly relevant to the shareholders and the C-levels, and are also what most managers are measured by. And this all roots back to the basic goal of any business, is that they want to stay profitable in the end. However, in the past decades, customers have gained much more leverage. And this has happened through trends like globalization and digitalization, so that companies actually have to think about, what does my customer need? And they have adopted a lot of customer-first policies.
That, I think, also roots back to, right, output versus outcome. I think that's what we see a lot, particularly about those more industrial companies that are used to build products. It's a huge transition for them to go from we building products, and those products are or used to be the best products in the world, to what's the actual outcome the customer wants to achieve with it. So I'd say this is not necessarily a question that is ingrained in most established companies. As I said, the closer they are to a more industrial or more product-like business model, we realize outcomes of a product is not something people have been thinking a lot about. So the rising power of customers is one thing, but also a shift from product-based to service-based economies, I think, force enterprises to become more outcome-oriented, and not just in terms of business outcome for the shareholder, which is one kind of customer, you could argue, but really the end customer that the business creates value for, right? That's how I understand you.
Yes. So the basic hypothesis is that customer outcomes lead to business outcomes. But in larger corporations, there's something even more interesting to focus on. So it's not only the focus on the external customer, but also creating a more heightened awareness of the internal customer. So what a lot of participants in my trainings and coaching say is, I don't really have an impact on the external customer. Who's the end user? I know who it is, but what I do in the end doesn't really provide a direct impact, or at least I can't really establish that chain of logic. So instead of only focusing on external customers, we like to propagate also internal customer centricity. So that means actually thinking about who is the person that uses this increment of value creation that I'm creating in my daily work and develops it further. Who do I need to get to know better in order to create a more efficient and effective value chain? So one example is, if your job is to provide access to data to other teams in your company, you should actually know their needs. You should know who they are. You should know their pains with accessing your data. You should know how they consume it. And you should actually know if there's anything you could do to improve their experience. So treat them just like a real customer.
Okay, so we have business outcomes and outcomes for the customer. And if you are in a large organization where you have other teams that you are supporting or along the value chain, along the value stream of the organization, different teams need to contribute to each other's work. You can also think of other units within the enterprise as your internal customers. So I think this is a good overview, different types of customer value. And I think you're touching on another really interesting structural topic. So this is, I think, if I counted correctly, the fifth reason already why it is so challenging to be outcome-oriented. And this is about division of labor. This is about the way organizations are built with functional units where people are very specialized to do one thing. It is a consequence of this industrial model where you have very efficient, very specialized functional units coming together. But this also is one reason why most of these units are sort of like drifting away and becoming more disconnected from the joint outcome all of these units are actually supposed to create for the customer. So a lot of our customers, a lot of the big companies we are working with, they are trying to establish value stream organizations again. They're trying to establish more cross-functional collaborations. But I think this is really underestimated. A lot of companies introduce OKRs and they believe it's just a new way of thinking for their existing teams. They underestimate how much change it requires over time to actually also enable teams along the value chain to define their outcomes and define cross-functional outcomes that go beyond the priorities of each of these functional parts. One last thing I often realize is it's not just about functional units, but also about processes, right? It's not just difficult that marketing, sales, product, all of these units sort of have their local and specialized priorities. It's also about processes and planning processes, more importantly. So there's finance, which has a say in how do we allocate budget, how do we allocate resources. There is project management, how do we prioritize input and work output in a different part of the organization. And so this is really disconnects work input output from the outcome it should create. It also disconnects it from the business impact it should have. And all of these strategic artifacts that are relevant to make a business run, they're drifting apart as a consequence of that established organizational model. So I think it goes much further than just being aware of what does it take to set the right kind of outcomes as a team or as an individual. So Alessia, in your trainings, I'm sure you are oftentimes confronted with questions about how to execute those new outcome-oriented frameworks like OKRs in a company, despite these realities that I was just describing. What advice would you give our listeners if they want to start using OKRs or they already started using it to get the most out of outcome orientation? What does it take to make outcome orientation work in an established organization?
So a goal should be that more alignment between teams should take place. And to be able, in order to do that, you need to speak the same language. So if I could advise you to do and change just one thing, it would be to change the way you write your OKRs or your goals. So put the customer and the value that you're creating in the actual objective. And to me, it all starts with OKR goal quality. In the end, OKRs is not only a strategy execution tool, but also a communication tool. If I can actually communicate the value that I'm providing to another team, it makes it so much easier for them to understand the work that I'm doing. So if I actually put the technical terms of the initiative that I'm doing, so the output, into the goal, it makes it so much harder for the people to actually understand what the value is and how they could actually pay into this or contribute to that. So that's something very important. So by actually understanding what the other team is providing in terms of value to the entire company, it makes it so much easier to shift away from thinking in silos and the team-centric thinking or the, let's say, functional-centric thinking that we have, and to find the common denominator, actually solving a customer problem. Another factor here is something that you already touched upon, is the connection of actually input, output, outcome, and the business impact. So establishing, so to say, a clear chain of logic between all of these factors. Just to give you an example, if I as a team have an OKR to increase customer satisfaction for a certain feature, I probably have deduced that from some sort of high-level OKR or a KPI that I'm monitoring where I see that this is something I should be working on. So what I need is to establish a clear chain of logic between the input, so what I need to achieve this, so to say the resources that I need, maybe engineering resources, and the work, the project, the feature that I'm actually executing. So the work that I need to have completed in order to achieve an outcome, so the output. In this case, we could say improvements made on a feature that we know would increase customer satisfaction. And connect all of that to the effect that I'm trying to have with these activities, which in this case could be the OKR. However, I need to keep in mind the ultimate goal, which is the impact on a certain business outcome. And in this case, this could be the overall satisfaction of the user with the product or even the profitability of the product itself.
Okay, we're already coming to an end. And I'd like to ask the last question for today. We talked about structural reasons in organization, why it is so hard to be outcome oriented in enterprises. So towards the end, let's come back to the individual. How can OKRs help each one of us, every individual, in establishing an outcome mindset?
First of all, through OKRs and actually taking care about the quality of OKRs, so having the customer and the value created in the OKRs itself, we all are not to think strategically and in strategic outcomes. However, the teams always can focus on everything that lies into their own circle of influence. We also like to talk about OKRs as a critical thinking framework. So basically developing a routine of constantly questioning, why am I even doing what I'm doing? Who am I creating value for? And you would be surprised how hard these questions actually are for many individuals and are often met with a lot of resistance. But to us, that is just a sign that we need to ask these questions even more. OKRs can also surface a lot of inefficiencies in the organization through asking these questions about outcome. And it's a chance to actually address these things and solve them. Additionally, it provides so much more purpose for people in the work because they're not only questioning the why, but also can clearly connect them to the what and the how. And to us, this is the first step towards institutionalized customer centricity and continuous customer outcome focus.
Wonderful. So I think just about half an hour, but so much content in there. By now I have, I think, six aspects that we talked about today, why outcome orientation is not just very important, but also why it is so difficult. So I noted down, this is just about how our brain works, right? We tend to rather plan the tangible. What are we doing? What are we building? And it's just sometimes more abstract, further in the distance, and you need to know more about what you actually want and why you want it to define the outcome instead of just the output. The other thing was about quality of goals and the quality of outcomes. How much orientation do different levels of the organization provide you with? So if you only have projects that are being delegated downwards the reporting line, it's very hard to define outcomes on a more operative level in the organization. Another one was ownership and accountability. If as a team I cannot be accountable, if I cannot take over ownership for the things I'm doing, the value I'm creating, the outcomes I am supposed to deliver to the customer, it's very hard to establish that outcome mindset on a deeper level. Then we talked about a couple of structural topics, a structural challenge like the division of labor. If you have functional units with local priorities, local KPIs, but in the end, everyone should actually contribute to a shared outcome for one customer, very hard to achieve that. We talked about product versus service-based businesses, business models, organizations, economies. If you've been selling just products over decades and you've been a powerful and a leading position in the market, you probably didn't have to think about the outcome of the product that much as it is or as important it is today. And ultimately, you, Alessia, recommend us to have a clear chain of logic and have a clear differentiation between those different strategic artifacts. What is an input, like investing resources into something, work input, work output, outcome, and business impact, right? Those are different things, and they're oftentimes mixed up. And that's probably one of the main reasons why outcome orientation is so hard to establish, but also why OKRs, particularly in the early days of establishing such a new strategy execution process with OKRs, are so difficult for established businesses. So again, Alessia, thanks for being here today. Thanks for spending the time with us.
Thanks for having me.
Before we close this episode, I'd like to remind our listeners to have a look at our show notes, where you can find links and additional information of everything we talked about today, basically. If you want to contribute to the next You Ask, We Answer episode, you can join our WorkPath community at community.workpath.com. And of course, if you want to learn more about OKRs, agility, about outcome orientation, we'd be happy if you check out our LinkedIn, our Facebook page, our Twitter, where you will find monthly webinars, events, and content, many of those created or hosted by Alessia and her team. And yeah, I think that's it for today. Thanks for taking the time. Thanks for listening to Super Kinetics. Until next time.